And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. My name is Dr. Roy Morgan. And I think I have some good information for you today. Now, this is going to be a little bit different. So just listen up and play along like it makes really, really good sense. One of the aspects of aging is people tend to lose the size of their brain. Now, how do you counter that? Well, your big, beautiful brain that God gave you is something that has to be used, and you have to exercise it. You know what the word atrophy means? It suggests that your muscles are getting smaller. The same is true for the heart. If you don't really breathe deeply, how strong do you think your diaphragm is going to be? How about your lungs? Well, the point is, as a person ages, one of the greatest predictors of all time of how long they're going to live and walk the earth is going to be based on how much strength they have. And how can you have strength unless you have some muscle? And so there's always a point where a person kind of passes the point of no return when they go from being very strong and vital and being able to have good balance and they're somewhat athletic. And they can command their body to step over a puddle or to walk up a flight of stairs or down a flight of stairs. Or they could walk across uneven terrain like in the pasture, or they want to walk down by the creek. Well, all these things, we kind of take them for granted, but you've got to have physical strength to make all this stuff work. And there's a point where if this catches you and you become very physically weak, or one of the best examples is if somebody just has an injury, it is hard to recover. So I came across an article. I want to share this with you right here. And if I'm not mistaken, this was only done on women. If it proves not to be so as I go through this. Yeah, it's only women. Okay. I'm looking at the study. Let me see, where does it come from? British Journal of Nutrition, 2009. August edition, volume 14, 1 through 8. Okay, pages 1 through 8. Okay, here's the idea right here. All right. I've had several people tell me this week, and I'm not mentioning names. I'm just interesting what people say about what they eat and, you know, what their health problems are and what they're trying to accomplish. So I won't kind of go into all that, but the idea is some women are choosing to eat a vegetarian diet. And so that means they get their caloric intake, all their protein, their fat, and their carbohydrates from a vegetable source. Does that make sense? And so they're finding out now, they're asking the question, how does the body get into a state where it can actually build some fresh, brand new muscle? Or maybe another way of saying this is, your body is in a continual state of turnover. You don't have the exact same muscle cell in your hip muscle like you did when you were 1 year old. No, that cell has died and it's replaced by a new cell. And so there's a continual turnover. But what the question I'm asking is, or the idea, what happens if you lose muscle at a faster rate than what you can build it? Well, you're going to have problems. You're going to have every negative consequence that's associated with aging. And so what Finnish health scientists did from the University of Helsinki is they did this unique study, and they published it in the British Journal of Nutrition, which is a very prestigious peer-reviewed journal, which means you got to pass muster in order to get it in there. And so what they're looking at here is, they're noticing that in Finland, the population is aging, and I'm going, well, okay, what does that really mean? Well, they're really concerned. Because a lot of these aging people in the Finnish, in Finland, they're tending to go more toward a vegan diet or vegetarian. And they're asking the question, well, is this going to lead to a problem, or is it going to radically improve the quality of the health? And the one thing that I'm not going to argue today against, I'm going to argue for it. When you eat vegetables and fruit, plants, your health is usually better. and you usually live significantly longer than those that never eat vegetables. So I think that there's really, really good things. And so, for example, who would argue that blueberries are bad and toxic and they have no value? I don't know of anybody. They're good for you. And so what they're asking is a vegetarian diet, is this likely to lead to some type of health problems? And of course, this is the question behind the researcher study. And they notice that as elderly people lose muscle mass, meaning their muscles begin to atrophy, obviously women are going to be so much more vulnerable when it comes to this than men, because men usually have more muscle mass. It's very interesting. You can always tell when you're out in public who works manually for a living. They look like it. You can look at their frame and you can tell. Their body is used to doing work, whether it's pushing a shovel into the ground to move dirt around or to do something that requires lifting. You can tell. Probably a simple way to say that is, who are the ranchers and who are the farmers? I've seen some pretty impressive specimens of ranchers and farmers that were well above the age of 60, and you couldn't tell they weren't 40 years old. And so the basic problem is, what if a vegetarian diet just doesn't provide the same thing for your body as, say, an animal-based protein? And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to find out whether these concerns are actually founded. So the Finns measured the body composition. I know these numbers aren't great, but this is a study nonetheless, so I'll read them to you. They had a grand total of one completely vegan woman. That's not many in that study, I'll admit that. But they had 10 lacto-vegetarian women, which, what does that mean? They're going to include, besides just vegetables and fruit, they're going to have dairy products. Does that make sense? And so they had a total also of 8 lacto-ovo-vegetarian women, which means they would have eggs and dairy products. Okay? And what they did was they compared this data, or data, so that's a total of, I'll just loosely say that there are exactly 19 vegetarian women, and they compared them with the body composition of 21 meat eaters. And when I say a meat eater, wouldn't that include fish, eggs, dairy, chicken, beef, stuff like that? The reason why this is interesting also is they looked at the amount of time these vegetarians were had been meatless, and that was for 12 years. And I thought, okay, well, it's not like it was just 2 weeks. It's for 12 years. And so when they looked at the body composition of these people that were vegetarians, they had 4.4 kilograms less muscle mass than the omnivores. Those are the ones that are eating meat, according to the researchers. Of course, I have my chart right here. You can't see it, but they have a graph that shows muscle mass index versus vegetarians and those that eat meat. And obviously, on the chart, it shows a significant difference. Those that eat meat, they tend to have more muscle mass. Therefore, they maintain their strength. Therefore, they can walk better and maintain their balance, and they can do more labor. I guess some of this depends on your mindset. Some people despise the idea of having work to do. There's others, when they work, it is pure pleasure. You can't do anything to throw them off their course. Their attitude is, oh my goodness, this is the work that God has given me to do. I love it. I want to do more of it. Some people, they do not feel that way. Maybe playing video games all day long and eating pizza is their gig. Yesterday, I was driving down the street, and I drove by real slow. There was a tent. When I say a tent, more of one of those kinds that just provide shade. And it said, free phones. let me let you guess. How many people were there for their free phones? It was everybody they could cram under that tent as possible. Okay. One thing that they noticed, they did blood tests. And this might be a little bit technical, but there's a lot of people that when I look at their blood test, it's going to measure what's called sex hormone binding globulin. And you're probably thinking, well, what does that mean? I've never heard of that before. Well, I'm going to try to explain it to you. So When they examined the women's blood, they noticed that the ones that were vegetarian, they had up to a 50% higher concentration of this binding protein called sex hormone binding globulin. And what that does is, when you get too much of it in your blood, guess what it does? It neutralizes the muscle-building hormone testosterone. Ah, so if somebody's eating a diet that increases the production of sex hormone binding globulin, so when that goes up high, you don't have the available testosterone to help build and play its role of influence on a growing new muscle. So, but after doing their calculations, the researchers conclude that the higher amounts of sex hormone binding globulin, it doesn't really explain why vegetarian women have less muscle mass than meat-eating women. So when the researchers analyzed the women's diet, they noticed it was above all the amount of animal protein that determined how much muscle mass the women are going to have. And so basically, they broke it down to this right here. Women that ate animal protein, and that could be as simple as eating a steak occasionally. If you wanted to eat sardines, that counts as meat. They're the ones that had all the muscle every single time. And they noticed that plant protein really had no effect whatsoever. And so to give you a better idea of the women's diets, all the women in the study consumed about 1 gram of protein per kilogram in body weight per day. And that's across the board, whether they were getting it from vegetables or plant protein or they were getting it from animal protein. So for the vegetarian women, about 0.54 grams of this was animal protein. That means it's going to mean from either dairy or from eggs. The women that ate meat, the protein was 0.71, just a little bit higher. But evidently, it made all the difference in the world as far as maintaining strength as you age. So when you go for a walk, or you do yard work, or you clean the house, or you exercise, you're telling your body, I need you to grow some new muscle for me. And when you eat animal protein, evidently your body does a good job of complying and growing what you need. And see, this has everything to do with how successful you're going to age. Maybe another way of saying it was, there really wasn't any way to really grow any new additional protein or muscle on a plant-based diet. You might prevent it from going downhill super fast, but you always lose muscle when you rely on stuff like beans and peas and grains. And that's always a hard conversation because, you know, the way that people are wired is if they hear something and they buy into it and believe it, it's kind of hard to get them to think about a new thought. But they will. They will if you give them enough information. So this is some information. The researchers suspect that while many traditional plant protein sources like legumes and grains, they do contain amino acids on paper, but in the real world, the body doesn't actually absorb these very well in practice. Maybe that's the definition of a reality, the actual way that things really are. We got to come to reality here. Another possibility is that plant protein has a less anabolic effect because plant proteins just don't have the amino acids leucine, methionine, or lysine. And muscles need these amino acids in order to function and to grow. One of the ones that I know is super, super beneficial is called leucine, L-E-U-C-I-N-E. And a lot of times bodybuilders will take leucine as a supplement, like in capsule form, maybe a powder, maybe they put it into a protein drink, because your muscle cells, they work their machinery so much more efficiently, and they get stronger when you get leucine. To me, that's very interesting. I started to look up an article on that. I didn't have time to. It's another time management issue. But when you get your protein from either eggs or fish or chicken, if you eat beef, all those things, they provide your body leucine, and your body uses that to grow new muscle. I promise you, that is what you want. If I asked you what your to rate your level of energy, and I said, okay, the number 10, that represents perfection. perfect energy. You feel amazing. You feel great. Everything's in great working order. And I also say that zero is representing scraping the bottom of the barrel. You're completely exhausted. You can't drag your carcass out of bed in the morning. You're just worn out. Well, most people are somewhere between 0 and 10. So let's just say that you rate your energy at a 5. Well, isn't there room for improvement? And so protein is one of those aspects of it. Although at the end of the study, the researchers go on to say that, you know, the study was really small, but it's enough to where you can kind of get your interest piqued a little bit. I came across this one right here. In the year 2007, researchers at Sherbrooke University, they also reported that older women have more muscle mass the more animal protein they eat. So I'm not telling you you have to go hog wild, but there's such a thing as enough. And that's what you want. You want to give your body enough of what it needs to get the job done. Okay, article number 2, and then we'll go to the phone lines. This program is Health Essentials. The phone number is 903-586-5257. And so I have another point or two with this one right here. This one is so different. Anyway, the title of the article is, What Happens to You If You Only Eat a Meat-Only Diet for a Year? With some frequency, I'm going to discuss strategies with a person that's trying to improve their health. And let's just say, for example, there is a woman or a man that is suffering horribly from an autoimmune disease. And I think the term autoimmune is going to suggest the person's immune system is attacking them. Yeah, it may be a specific area, like a joint. Like if somebody had rheumatoid arthritis, if the immune system starts to attack that joint, oh boy. You want to see some twisted, gnarled, bent fingers? Rheumatoid would do that. Well, sometimes a diet strategy called a carnivore diet for a short season can actually prove to be very beneficial. So if you haven't heard this before, maybe this is the very first time that you've come across this. All right. There was a... where's the guy from? It's got to be... Okay, the gentleman's name is Vilmar Stefansson. That's got to be Swedish, Norwegian, something like that. Well, anyway, this guy, Stefansson, this is back in the 1920s. He had lived by choice for many years with the Eskimos, or maybe we should call them the Inuits, okay, as they're called these days. And he made an observation that as long as the Inuits or the Eskimos were on a diet that consisted almost exclusively of fish and meat, these ice dwellers nevertheless remained healthy. Oh yeah, I bet you anything. They had access to blueberries and stuff like that, vegetables, but only during that short, narrow window of the summertime, wherever they lived. And you tell nutritionists this back in 1920, and they say, impossible. There is no way that that can be done. You can't just eat meat. That's wrong. And so what did Stefansson say? He said, well, it is true. Sorry to break it to you, but it's right. And so in order to prove his point, he and other explorer, Carsten Anderson, they decided to eat only meat for a whole year. And, of course, they submitted to medical supervision at the Bellevue Hospital in New York. And, of course, obviously, this is where physicians can monitor patients and they can figure out how are they doing. But the Inuits or the Eskimos, what did they eat? They ate fatty fish. But they didn't allow Stefansson to eat fish. No, he had to eat meat from farm animals. And I'll have to go back and look it up, but I'm sure it's beef, pork, and chicken. How about that? You and I both know, just from studying this, that fish is going to contain really, really good fatty acids. You ever heard of cod liver oil or fish oil? And the farm meat probably really didn't have much of that. The experiment, therefore, says little about the healthy Inuit that Stefansson had gotten to know because he lived with him for several years. But even in the 1920s, the experiment was very controversial, and of course you could call this a carnivore diet. So there's a lot of little nuggets in here. So Stephenson wrote this article called Adventures in Diet, in which appeared in the November 1935 in Harper's Monthly Magazine. If you don't have a copy of that laying around, there's probably several people listening that still have kept theirs. He got a storm of protests from friends and family that broke upon us when the press announced that they were entering Bellevue Hospital, wrote Stephenson. These were based mainly upon the report that we were going to eat our meat raw, which is true, and that the belief that we were using lean meat exclusively. So this lean meat, now when you think about that, what is the typical type of meat that the average American insists upon? Oh, they wanted lean. Let's get rid of that fat. Everybody knows that fat is bad. You just can't, you can't do that. Of course, no, they did cook their meat. Okay, to eat only lean meat would be impossible. Stephenson knew this from experience, and of course, that's what the nutritionists and the doctors insisted on. Only eat lean meat. We do not want you on ribeye steaks or Wagyu beef steaks that have lots of marbling. No, no, no. That fat's bad for you. So Stephenson knew this from experience. Primitive peoples who are dependent on fish and meat for their diet, they do their best to make sure they eat enough fat. And the point is, if they eat too much lean meat, every single time what happens? You get sick. Explorers know about this also in situations where there is only lean meat. And for example, if you are on an uninhabited island where their only food source is half-starved rabbits, well, guess what happens when that's all you eat are lean rabbits? Well, you develop what's called rabbit starvation syndrome, which can be fatal, by the way. I would hope these explorers had a fishing pole with some hooks and some fishing line and a reel, so they could actually catch fish from the ocean and eat those. Let me see, where am I? Okay. During the experiment, a doctor managed to persuade Stephenson to at least try eating only lean meat for a short period. Well, he did. And guess what happened to him? He got really sick. He developed nausea and diarrhea. Now, if anybody was to call me on the phone right now and say, hey, I'm dealing with nausea and diarrhea, you know what my first thought would be? My first thought would go to one of the most important systems in all the body. I would probably look at the liver and the gallbladder. So when you eat meat of any kind, let's just say chicken, what prevents you from turning into a chicken when you eat a chicken? Well, that would be your liver. Your liver is somehow or another able to reconfigure the chicken protein into Mr. Smith protein, or Mr. Brown protein, or Mrs. Jones protein. So it's able to transform it and make it into a human protein so your body can utilize it. And so if you said, well, I've got nausea and diarrhea, well, that would be an indication that your gallbladder is severely struggling. You know what that really means? It means your body is trying to tell you it doesn't like what you're putting into your mouth. And so, yes, if you say my idea of a perfect diet is heavy-duty greasy onion rings and greasy French fries and lasagna, well, or you're asking for it. You are asking for trouble. That's not what we call healthy fat. But when you eat fatty cuts of meats like steaks that have marbling in them and they're very tender and easy to cut, well, you're making it easy for your liver and your gallbladder to work. I think we've kind of lost the idea that fat actually serves a good purpose in the body. And that's really what you want. You want your body efficiently converting fat into energy. And so Stephenson, this Norwegian explorer, I think, he developed horrible nausea and diarrhea from eating lean meat. But he recovered on his own, because what did he do? He included calf brains to his diet. I do not recommend that. It sounds gross. Haven't you ever heard of mad cow disease? Crutchfield-Jacobson disease? You do not want that. So during the experiment, the men got about a quarter of their calories from protein. The rest they got from fat. And of course, I would never recommend this right here. I don't think that you could do the Eskimos. They're eating natural foods in the area. They're eating fish that are high in fat. What these guys were doing in Bellevue Hospital was eating farm-raised animal meat. I don't even know if that qualifies as grass-fed beef, what they were giving them. The human body, you've got to have some carbohydrates. And so the idea of eating meat and vegetables, is that like surprising that it turns out that's really good for you? Didn't God tell them in the garden they could eat of every tree in the Garden of Eden except for one? Yeah, that's true. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open, and I'll get you right in, okay? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
I've taken medicine like atorvastatin.
Atorvastatin.
Pardon me?
Atorvastatin.
Yes, uh-huh. That's for cholesterol or something like that?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard on the person's body?
Yeah, if you were to take that word, the atorvastatin, that's just the way I'm choosing to pronounce it. It may be more like what you're saying, but I have mispronounced words before. But if you Googled and you just typed into your computer, can atorvastatin lead to diabetes? Well, see what you're going to find out. I already know the answer because I've Googled it about 100 times. And so study after study shows that if you take that drug, you're going to develop diabetes eventually.
Oh, okay.
Would that sound like a good trade-off?
What do you mean trade-off? Something different?
No. A good trade-off would be, a bad trade would be, I'm going to take this drug to lower my cholesterol, but what it's going to do, it's going to cause me to have a tendency toward developing diabetes.
Okay.
Or another way of saying it is, how would you like to have your feet go numb and have toes removed because your blood circulation to your toes are not good? Or how would you like to lose your vision because of side effects of diabetes? Or how would you like your kidneys to go ahead and die because that's a side effect of too much sugar on the kidneys? Would you like any of those things?
No, sir.
Okay, well, that's what that drug, if you take it for an average of 7 years, it gives you a very high tendency or risk toward developing diabetes.
Okay. So is there anything I can do so I don't take it anymore?
Yeah. And basically what happens is when your cholesterol is a bit higher than what your doctor likes or what you'd like, what you want to do is you want to find a way to get the body back into good balance. And I'm going to give you 3 or 4 different ideas, okay?
Okay.
And I'm not trying to say all of them are completely related, but I think that they're true and accurate. Okay, number one. There was a study done in India in a very specific community of people called the Jain community. It's not spelled J-A-N-E. I think it's like J-I-N, I think. I'd have to look it up, but it's easy to look up. But what they noticed was those that had the highest cholesterol, they absolutely had the lowest intake of what's called onions and garlic. Those that had the lowest natural cholesterol are the ones that consume the most garlic and onions. So if we take a step back and look at that, what conclusions could we maybe come up with? Just maybe consuming onions and garlic is really good to keep our cholesterol in good working order. Would you consider that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, point number two. There was a study that I looked at from a doctor in Nigeria, and I'm just going to try to make it sound real simple. I can't remember the name of the city, the main largest city in the country of Nigeria, but it's a big one. I mean, there's probably, 30 million people that live there. Is it Aleppo? I can't remember. But anyway, but this doctor was in charge of this hospital wing where these men had skin conditions, but these men were also taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. They were also on blood pressure-lowering drugs. Which, that's a side effect of diabetes also. Your blood pressure goes up. But anyway, to make a long story short, he said, you know what? All these men have a little bit too much iron that builds up in their body. So I know you get the idea that when a woman is in her fertility years exactly every 28 days. She's going to have her menstrual cycle. And so some of the iron in the blood just gets kind of cleansed or washed out. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay, but men, we don't have that mechanism. So we tend to be pretty good at holding on to iron or having iron build up in our body. And so when you take the human body that's mainly made of water and you start adding iron dust, that's what fortified foods are. So if you and I went to the grocery store and we saw a box of Cheerios and it said it was enriched or fortified with 11 vitamins and minerals, you flip the label around and it says in parenthesis, reduced iron. Now, I don't know that I would even know what that means, but I do because I've looked it up. It means iron dust. So they take cereal and they add iron dust to it. So what's that iron dust going to do once it gets in your body? It's going to start rusting. So anytime that your body starts rusting, you're going to start oxidizing. That means you're going to need more cholesterol. So cholesterol increases to soak up the rust or the iron. And so in this study, back to the doctor in Nigeria, he tried an experiment. He had these men just donate blood. It'd be like the equivalent of you and I going to Carter Blood Care, you know, on Baxter Street in Tyler next to TJC and say, hey, I'd like to just show up today and help, you know, save somebody's life. I'd like to donate a pint of blood. Well, if I donate a pint of blood, what's going to happen is I'm going to be removing some of that old iron buildup in my body. So in these men, guess what happened? All their cholesterol levels had gone from being really, really high back down to normal, but it took about 4 blood donations to accomplish that. The other thing that I find very interesting is their blood pressure numbers. Every time they gave blood, sir, their blood pressure came down a little bit lower and lower. It was very, very interesting to me. And so that didn't require a drug to lower cholesterol. It just required a blood donation. But when you donate blood, you're kind of letting go of some of the old iron. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. But what if you're anemic? I mean, I was told I'm anemic.
Well, if you're anemic, you may not do that. So that may not be the issue. So do you know the reason why you're anemic?
I thought it was not getting enough iron. Seems like whenever I fry potatoes in an iron skillet, my blood count is okay with iron.
Okay.
But stuff like that, so.
Well, one of the greatest blood-building foods of all time would be liver and onions. There's almost nothing that can beat that.
Okay.
Beef liver is actually the most nutrient-dense substance on the planet. And so it has every component and element that your body requires to help strengthen and build your bone marrow and your blood.
Uh-huh.
So those are a couple options that you have right there. But to me, the most important thing is, what can we do to prevent your body from rusting? And that's where the cholesterol goes up. So can I give you a couple more ideas?
Yes, sir.
Okay, there is a fruit that's known as the pomegranate.
Okay. How do you spell that, please?
P-O-M. I'm going to have to write it down myself. Isn't this horrible? Okay, pomegranate. P-O-M-E. G-R-A-N-A-T-E, I think. Pomegranate.
Okay.
Don't you remember when you and I were little boys, we would go to Aunt Lola's and Aunt Vernie's house and we would climb their pomegranate tree? Well, at least that's what I did growing up. it was a huge tree, but man, when those pomegranates came and when they were ripe, sometimes I'd climb like 30, 40 feet up in the tree. I was so scared I was going to fall sometimes. Well, I probably really wasn't scared. When you're a kid, you just don't get scared about doing stuff like that, do you?
Right.
But if, so pomegranate is one of the most unique plants because of a compound that's contained therein. And for some reason, I can't remember the exact name of the nutritional compound. But so what I'm suggesting is, let me give you a different idea. They did a study on men that had heart attacks. And these heart attacks were severe enough that they admitted them to intensive care in the hospital to help them recover. They didn't die, but they wanted to find out what would happen to these men is once they have a heart attack and once they're in the intensive care or ICU, what would happen if we gave them some pomegranate juice? You want to guess what happened? The men that got the pomegranate juice left the hospital 4 days earlier than the ones that did not. Now, you tell me, does that mean that maybe there's a component of pomegranate juice that might actually help the heart to heal? Yes.
That's good information, because I had one heart operation.
Well, and it's a pomegranate is so good for the heart. Now, there's a lot of people, they don't really care for the sugar, so the way around that, you can just get pomegranate powder. It's so easy to come by. It's actually probably cheaper that way. And I have discovered that if you can get a person to just take a cup of green tea or hibiscus tea or rose hips tea, something like that, just an herbal tea, and put a spoonful of the pomegranate powder and stir it up, that's like a pretty easy, consistent way of doing it.
Okay.
Let me give you one more. I know I'm hitting you with a lot of stuff to think about, but I think these are good things. All right, if we went down to Katy, Texas, or we went along the coast of Louisiana, we'd notice they have a lot of rice farms. Would you agree?
Yes.
It's been a while since I've been down close to Galveston, but when you're down by Galveston, Katy area, I think there's quite a few people that grow rice for a living. You know what? I know I'm going on a side note here, or maybe a rabbit trail. Where would the world be right now if we did not have corn, potatoes, wheat, or rice? That would probably be 95% of the entire planet would starve to death without those starches and grains.
Right.
If the world had to survive on broccoli and asparagus, the world would probably die in about 30 days from stress. So, rice is an incredible crop. And when they take and process the rice, they remove the outer husk or the bran or the germ. Do you know what I'm talking about? Kind of like when you take wheat and you throw it up in the air, you're trying to separate the edible part of the wheat from the chaff, you know, the husk, the outer germ of it. And so what they do is when they take rice and they process it, they get what's called the rice bran, B-R-A-N. And one thing that's just naturally has a great occurrence in the rice bran is a vitamin. It's actually kind of a B vitamin-like compound that's called inositol hexaphosphate. I know that's too technical, but for short, I call it IP6. IP6 is just the short abbreviation for the substance inositol hexaphosphate. So that's where they get this vitamin from. So they put IP6 in a capsule, and what happens is when people take it, it acts like a chelating agent to start removing all the debris from your body. And so you have to understand, that's the reason the cholesterol is elevated, one of them, is because that cholesterol is going up to try to soak up the poison in your blood. It's trying to soak up like a sponge any toxic waste or debris it can get its hands on. So what I want to say is, let's figure out why cholesterol is elevated instead of just arbitrarily giving you tons of drugs to lower it. And the thing of it is, I've read so many studies on this, I am so hard-pressed to find studies that demonstrate it, that it's worth all the side effects and all the costs to even take it. I would definitely put onions and garlic above atorvastatin to help improve the health of the body every single time. But back to the substance IP6. What you're wanting to do is you're wanting to restore the health of the body. And one of the ways of doing that is pulling out all the old debris and the gunk from the arteries. And so, have you ever heard the word of chelation before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Chelation comes from a Greek word called chela. And chela is translated, maybe you're transliterated into a word called the claw. From Greek to English. I'm not a Greek scholar, I promise you. I'm forever going to Bible Hub. Jake taught me about that website, but I can type in a Bible verse and I can say, what does this Greek word mean right here? Because I don't understand everything I read, do you?
No, I don't.
So I look up this Greek word chela, and it means the claw. So what I want you to think of is a bald eagle is swooping down through a mountain valley in Oregon, and he sees a beautiful Chinook salmon in the stream, and he's going to grab onto him and carry him off to eat him. Now, you tell me, do you think that eagle's going to let go of that salmon with its claws?
No.
No, absolutely not. So what you have here, when you take IP6 or inositol hexaphosphate, it's going to act like an eagle talon. What does it do? It grabs on to debris and gunk and toxic waste that's embedded in your arteries and cleans them out. So in order to have your arteries and your blood become more supple and flexible and bendable, that's what you want. You don't want arteries that are hard as a rock and stiff. That's called plaque and calcium deposits or cholesterol deposits. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So those are a whole bunch of ideas right there to help accomplish what you want.
Okay. Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
No, I do thank you for your information.
You're welcome. I hope that helps a whole bunch. I hope it helps everybody else, too.
Yes, sir.
All right. I hope you have a good day, buddy.
You as well. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line once again open. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I'd be glad to help you. Every single week, I have people that either send me texts or messages saying they can't get through. Well, you can get through right now. Just pick up the phone and dial 903-586-5257. And I'll do my very best to answer a question. Of course I'm biased. I'm biased in that I want to come up with solutions for health problems that are not destructive to the human body. I mean, the goal, after all, is not to poison you or kill you, is it? No, absolutely not. I think back in the year 2011, there was a study, and they asked the question, how many people died from taking a nutritional supplement in the year 2011? You know what the answer is? Zero. Now, there were some people that, you know, how do you know if you're allergic to, I mean, this is a real legitimate issue. If you're highly allergic to, say, nuts, and somebody says, here, go ahead and trust me on this. You can trust me. Eat these peanuts. Let's see what happens. Well, what if you go into anaphylactic shock and die? That's pretty bad. But as far as a natural vitamin remedy or herbal remedy that's legitimate, no, I'm not aware of anybody dying from that. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. Let me mention the phone number again, 903-586-5257. The program that was on the radio before I came on board a while ago, it was talking about mental health. If you did a literature search today and you said, okay, I'm going to find out, what about these people that spend their days outside as opposed to spending their time indoors all day long? And of course, maybe a reverse way of saying that, a lot of times people that really, really have very severe mental illness, they're indoors all day long. I can't think of many things that would be more toxic than sitting in front of a computer. And, you know, I know this is kind of negative to say, but if all you do is read negative articles, or you read things that aren't even true on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, you know what? What you need to do is you need to set your affections on things above. That's what you need. If there's a message that's more positive than thinking about good things, I think there's a Bible passage in the book of Philippians that says, think on these things. And it's going to be stuff like, whatsoever is lovely, whatsoever is of good report, if there's anything worthy of praise, if there be any virtue. I know I got them out of order. Anything of excellence. What do you think about that idea of the word excellence? Does that mean doing the worst possible job at the task that you've been given? No, it's rising to the benchmark of excellence. And of course, when it comes down to it, this is what your body is composed of. You are the sum total of how you've taken care of yourself. So if you don't like the way that your health is right now, well, you got a chance to change. And so I think the word they use in the Bible is the T word, turn. You need to stop the direction you're going, and you need to turn and go a different direction. Does that make sense? Of course it does. This ain't rocket science. You can decide today that you're going to put those soft drinks down. You're going to quit putting liquid death into your body. There was an article that I looked at last night, and I'm just kind of laughing to myself, but it said the quickest way to the afterlife is drinking soda waters all day long. When I say soda waters, I'm talking about Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper. And you're thinking, well, Dr. Morgan, I don't do that. I just drink 12 Diet Dr. Peppers a day. I'm not so sure those aren't the worst ones. All this artificial sugar. From my perspective, I cannot help a person get well if they stay on artificial sweeteners. It's impossible. I'll tell you some other stuff, too. I'm starting to sour on the idea of stevia and monk fruit. I really am. It doesn't take a genius to figure out if you can't get well, you start examining a person. I think in the book of Corinthians it says examine yourself. What is wrong with that? Maybe we need to do more self-examination to evaluate where exactly we are. You know, if you ask me my opinion, this is what I'd say about the Holy Spirit. If you desire the good things of God and you want to read the Bible and you're excited about it, well, that's probably one of the works of the Holy Spirit. I don't exactly have the exact chapter and verse scripture for you, but what happens if you really seek to do the right thing? That's probably the work of the Holy Spirit. What if you want to set your mind on things above? Or like one version of the Bible says it, set your affections on things above. That'd be the work of the Holy Spirit. How much can you get out of a Bible study if you don't put any energy into it? You're going to exactly get out of this what you put into it. And of course, human health is no different. You're going to get out of what you put into it. Now, what I'm kind of used to, people are very, very good at making excuses. I've done plenty of that. I'm ashamed of it. I don't want to ever make excuses. I don't want to complain. It doesn't do a lick of good. The only thing that's ever going to matter is what are you doing with the talents that you've been given? Are you going to develop those? Are you going to try to make the world a better place? What would the world be like if there were no Christians on the face of the earth? Well, I'm thinking it wouldn't go so well. What do you think? The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Okay? Here's an article right here. All right. It's a brilliant article. The title of it is A Healthy Way of Life. It is the sum of lifestyle factors that counts. You're probably thinking to me, duh. The abstract says a healthy way of life is not something that stands or falls with just one thing, concludes a Korean study published in the Journal of Preventive Medicine and Public Health. Ultimately, it is the sum total of lifestyle factors that makes a way of life healthy or maybe unhealthy. How about that? In the year 2011, I got that wrong, sorry, 2012, please forgive me, researchers from the Seoul National University published an epidemiological study in which they followed exactly 14,533 men, their age 40 to 59, from 1993 all the way up to 2008. So, let me see, what does my mathematical skill say? Oh, yeah, that's 15 years. Actually, here we go. 93 to 2007 and 8, that's 15. During that time, 990 men in the study, they died. The researchers tried to find any associations between the risk of death and the lifestyle of the study participants. The researchers, they knew that the lifestyle of those of the study participants, because the men had completed these very detailed, standardized questionnaires when the study began. Okay, here it is right here. Based on these answers, the researchers gave the men a score between 0 and 28. The figure below, which I'm not going to read this chart, it's just too much information. The figure below shows how the researchers calculated the scores and the effect of individual factors. And so, you know what? It's everything from what do you drink? What do you eat? How many vegetables do you consume? Do you ever eat fish from the ocean? Is broccoli a part of your diet? Do you go rollerblading? Do you listen to music? How much time do you actually spend in the sunshine? Do you go for a walk, or do you get on your electric scooter for it to push you around? Well, you can figure this out. Riding a scooter around town or hovercraft is not the same as walking. Do you own a pair of tennis shoes? Do you drink coffee, tea? It's just a lot of factors. So, do you know what the most important factor was with aging or with dying? Well, bingo, it's your age. So this is not rocket science. The older you are, if you take 59 plus 15, you're going to come up with what? 74. So if you're 74 years of age, it's your age. I know you understand this, but as we age, a lot of the machinery becomes more used and worn out. Okay? So it showed that when you get older, your risk of dying goes up. We all know that. But the other thing that was controllable, you can't really control age. You can't say, I am not going to participate in the chronological age. You can't do that. You're going to age. So if you're 59 years old, you can't say, well, I really feel like I'm 30. Okay, well, you can. There's a different topic on that. But the most controllable thing was smoking. Smoking. If you smoke cigarettes, you're asking to leave this world prematurely. And so every other conceivable factor, the effect is actually relatively small. It says that the men with the highest total scores were nearly 17 times more likely to die during the study than men with the lowest scores. And so, you know, if you don't exercise, you get a point. If you don't sleep very much, boy, sleep is a big one. I think they give the number 3. Smoking was 4. Your age, yeah. Actually, it's very interesting. Those that dropped out of school when they're 7th and 8th grade, they really died a lot sooner. They go to show that the more education you have, the longer that you live. It's actually like a great benefit. Now, to me, I'm easy to please. You don't have to go to a university. But what if you set your mind like Flint that you're going to become a lifelong learner, kind of like the way that you would approach studying the Word of God? I don't think there's anything wrong with you deciding that, man, this stuff is valuable. I need to know what the Word of God says from Genesis all the way to Revelation. And so, guess how you're going to do that? Well, if you show up to church, most likely you're going to hear the Word of God. Does that have value to you? Well, we'll find out if you go to church tomorrow. Okay? What if you decide that you're going to start studying the Bible every single day? Well, the chances are you're going to start to learn and grow and grow in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus. That's a good one, isn't it? But education, very, very protective against dying. So if you don't go to a university, what can we call education? Read and study. You know, I've talked about this in the past. So if you told me that there is a woman and they're doing test after test after test to see if she has dementia, and the neurologists are extremely puzzled. They don't know why she can't think straight and why her memory's gone. She can't do normal activities. And finally, when they do the 30th MRI and brain scan, they go, aha, now we've figured out she has dementia. Well, I mean, you don't really need that. You know, based on the person's performance. And all the drugs in the world are probably not going to do much to turn that around. I mean, I've only done this for, 35 years now? I really haven't seen that strategy ever work. Now, maybe you're different. Maybe you're telling me that your neurologist is giving you a drug that's completely reversed the dementia and the cognitive decline. All of a sudden, now you have fabulous short-term memory. And you can process all manner of information. And you really, people say that you're smart as a whip. Well, I haven't ever seen that before. I would like to see that. Oh, my goodness, wouldn't that be great if they had a drug? If they had a drug that could reverse Alzheimer's and dementia. But that doesn't exist. You know, that's the American idea. The American idea, there's such a thing as a shortcut, a quick fix, get rich quick. You can say it any number of ways, but do those really, yeah, I guess so. If you play the lottery and you pick the right numbers, then all of a sudden you have $50 zillion in your bank account. But that's not reality. You know that all the lottery does is it takes money out of people that can't afford to lose it. They buy into this fantasy and they lose everything. Well, your health is the same way. You just need to get down, roll up your sleeves. It's called elbow grease. Get to work. You know, maybe you should consider getting a good pair of tennis shoes so you can go for a long walk today. Maybe not at 2 o'clock in the afternoon unless you want to die of heat stroke. Anyway, there were a lot of factors in the study. They showed it's just so incredible. In this prospective cohort study, smoking, drinking alcohol, physical exercise, sleep hours, education level, they were all associated with premature mortality. So you're going to die quick if you smoke, drink, don't exercise, don't sleep worth a flip, and you don't ever try to learn anything. And they said the body mass index. So if you're obese, guess what that means? You're going to die much sooner than what you should. I've got the survival data here, and it doesn't look good when you don't take care of yourself. But in the group of people that increased their lifespan, well, guess what they did? They didn't smoke. They didn't drink alcohol. They believed in using and moving and making their bodies obey them by getting out there and doing yard work. It's a huge impact on lifespan. I'm trying to look for the chart when it comes to vegetables and fruit, and I can't find it, but that's on here too. So you tell me, you know what the number one and two foods are that are going to cause you to die? It's chips and soft drinks. A gentleman told me this week, he was saying the school district in Houston, where he's from, they won't allow the sales of Gatorade anymore. You know why? Because it's causing all the enamel to be dissolved on the children's teeth. And so it's taken a long time, but they finally figured out the more Gatorade the kids have, the more they have to, they're losing their teeth. And you can't afford to do that. Your teeth are a precious heritage. Let's keep them. Okay, I've enjoyed being with you today. The program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Roy Morgan. Lord willing, I'll be back this time next week.